This is Sports Talk with Joe Smith, live from Yogi's Grill and Bar at the corner of 10th and Indiana. And now, here's Joe Smith.
So October has arrived, and in 3 weeks, the Indiana U will be adding six new members into its IU Athletics Hall of Fame. Class of 2016, celebrating the 35th year of enshrinement. The annual Hall of Fame dinner ahead on Friday, October 28th at the Hinkie Hall of Champions. Tonight, a man from Pennsylvania, but a Hoosier now for 52 years, Harold Morrill, joins us tonight. And I tell you, if anyone can span five decades of memories plus concerning Indiana football, it is Harold, a native of Verona, Pennsylvania, who, wearing that jersey number 51, anchored the offensive line at center for John Pont's Rags to Riches Rose Bowl team of 1967. Harold, an outstanding player, a man who has participated in nine of Indiana's 10 bowl games as either a player, an assistant coach, or administrator. And he, 9 years ago, was inducted into the Indiana Football Hall of Fame. Harold is also a member of the Western Pennsylvania Hall of Fame and a Clevenger Award winner. And a friendship with this man that blossomed with your host some 44 years ago. And it's his night, a big night coming up in 3 weeks. And it's our pleasure. It's a big night to have him with us tonight, Harold Morrill. A little bit later, in her fourth year as head women's soccer coach, Amy Burberry and senior captains Veronica Ellis and Marissa Borski drop in. Two huge conference games this week for a young Indiana squad facing defending national champion Penn State on Thursday night on the Yeagley pitch, and last year's Final Four semifinalists Rutgers on Sunday afternoon. But holding its own through the first 13 games of the season, we'll catch up a little bit later with Amy and her two captains. It is all part of Sports Talk. We're live as always, opening up October from Yogi's Grill and Sports Bar here at the corner of 10th and Indiana. Yay! Yeah! Heck yeah, everybody! Well, along with our producers, Will Boatman, high atop our One City Center studios downtown, on-site producers Joanna and Mike Lascott, and all of our sponsors, including the staff and management of Yogi's. Hi again, everyone. Joe Smith, and honored to have sitting next to me, sharing a relationship with a man that started for me back in the early 70s. So pleased to have you with me, Harold. I always have called you H, and you've had some names, but Harold Morrill is a name I always revered. And welcome to the show, my friend, first of all.
Well, thanks a lot, Joe. I appreciate it, and I'm honored to be here.
Well, I tell you, we're honored to have you, and we're going to be more honored by the end of October when you go in as a member of the IU Athletics Hall of Fame. And as I say, it all started, you never, ever let me forget that you were from Pennsylvania, especially Verona. But how did it all start? Let's go back. What attracted you to Indiana University when Coach John came knocking at that Morrill door?
Well, actually, I was recruited by Phil Dickens. My Sam Congee was an assistant coach. And my senior year in high school, I was a decent football player. I actually signed a scholarship with Alabama before I decided I better stay up north and look at the Big Ten. And came down between Michigan State and Indiana, and I had played against a lot of guys in Pennsylvania that were already here at Indiana. So once I made my visit and liked it, and it was a tough decision, but as a freshman, we weren't eligible to play, so we were still on probation. So we were coming off that probation then after my freshman year. So that was a big in my decision, and having guys that I played against here. And you know, you get a little homesick sometime when you're 17 years old and you go, you know, 500 miles away from home. So, but it worked out. It really did. And just a fabulous opportunity.
Well, and I had forgotten about the Phil Dickens connection there, obviously. But my connection with you began in the early years of, well, actually after we had gone to the Rose Bowl. But let's go back when you broke in. And you mentioned, you brought up a good point, freshmen couldn't play those years. But talk about the early makings of what was still one of the greatest moments in Indiana, the greatest moment in Indiana football history.
Well, ironically, you know, the first 2 years I was here, you had to play both ways. And then in 65, they changed the rule where you could play either offense or defense. So when Coach Pont came in, I used to snap on the extra point field goals and punts already. And so he moved me to from linebacker to, you know, I played more linebacker with Dickens, and he moved me here to center then. I actually played 2 years for John, and then my senior year, I got hurt in the first ball game and got redshirted. And it was a little interesting on the red shirt because the NCAA had a rollback at that time where you couldn't graduate and still have a fifth year. So I had to cut back on my classwork and then take 6 graduate hours and 6 undergraduate hours, 12 hours, to be eligible to play in the 67 season.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, when you came out of the and going into the 67 season and what was the 68 Rose Bowl on that January 1 day out in Pasadena, California, did you have an inkling what was to be that fall of 67 here in town?
Well, our coaches, you know, visited a lot of different staffs in the South. We became almost like a track team. We all had to lose weight. They switched an All-American, Doug Cruzan, who was our team captain, to defense. They wanted more speed. But I really believe what we threw a curveball on the defense that we picked up is we played a 4-4. And no one else in the Big Ten played a 4-4, so it was very difficult for teams to prepare for us when we would, you know, play them because most everyone played a 50 with a man on the center's nose.
You know, they're, and to this day, I can still remember, and well, to this day, it's the highest ranked football team that an Indiana University squad has ever beaten. And when Jack Mollenkopf brought that third ranked Boilermaker team in here on that bright, unseasonably warm November day with a lot on the line in addition to the old oaken bucket.
Right. It was a packed house. You know, a lot of parents were just standing on the sideline. It was jammed. I mean, if the fire marshal was there, we probably had to call the game. I don't know. But it was an exciting time, and thank God that Ken Kaczmarek hit Perry Williams and Mike Boffman recovered the ball. But I really think that it was my snap to John Eisenberg and a 64-yard punt from the end zone that helped win the game for us.
Punt, John, punt.
Yes.
Were you the one that snapped it high when he ran that ran with the ball at Ann Arbor?
And by the way, it wasn't high, Joe. I went back and looked at the film, and it was a perfect snap. And we're running down the field, and we look over, and he's running next to us. Well, he didn't get very far, and then they scored and tied the game up. So we had to score a late touchdown to win 27-20 at Michigan.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I remember every doggone game. And we've had in here on this show throughout the years – members of the 67 Rose Bowl team, the Rags to Riches. And I can remember going out to the old field house and watching not only, watching that Minnesota game on a dark and gloomy day. Murray Warmoth, I believe, was the head football coach of the Gophers back then. And, wow, what a hard-earned win that was.
Well, you know, we had 3 teams in 6-1, you know, at the end of the season. And Minnesota had Purdue had beaten Minnesota, and Minnesota beat us, and then we beat Purdue. So there was 3 teams at 6-1, and we didn't know until about after the game, after the Purdue game, until about midnight. Coach Pond called all of us, and I was married at the time, so most of the guys were over in my apartment sitting around waiting for the phone call, especially the offensive linemen.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, and the rest is history, and you know, we went out there on that January 1 day out in Pasadena, and I still think that that was one of John McKay's strongest teams that he had at USC in a 14-3 ball game. We acquitted ourselves quite nicely in that, and we had some chances to do some things.
Right. We dropped a touchdown pass right near the before halftime there, and then Gonzo got hurt on a nice drive we had going into the third quarter. And they brought in Mike Perry, and so we had just a couple things that, you know, that were very difficult. But our defense played terrific that day. O.J. was held to 117 yards rushing. He scored both touchdowns. We made the people in Indiana happy because the point spread was 11.5, so we won by half a point.
There you go.
I see Jeff Sagarin sitting out here. He probably had that number probably at 12.
Oh, he had it probably dialed in. Then mentioning all of the, you know, having to do what you had to do academically, you got your bachelor's in physical education in 68 after it was all said and done. After that great run of your career, what prompted you then to, get into coaching, H?
Well, I took a school at university school when it was a laboratory school with the university, and I ended up being head eighth grade football coach and then also assistant track coach with Denny Martin. John Ray hired me over there, and I taught special ed. I got my master's in special education, and at that time, for a man, that was an unusual, you know, because it was all women that taught special ed. But so I started in special ed and was over there, and then I would go to school also in the evening. And then John asked me when, you know, he took a chance on me at 24 years old to see if I would come and do the collegiate coaching. And, you know, and we had a good football team over there. My eighth grade football team went 8-0.
Yeah,
and that's the only time I've been a head coach, undefeated.
You know, and I've been around long enough to remember the Univies and that rickety old press box there. And a matter of fact, that's where the IU women's soccer team,
right.
They practice to this day without the press box. That's gone. But
right.
Used to have to climb that ladder to get in the I couldn't do it now at 69 because I could do it back when I was 22. Hey, we're just getting started. And with Harold Morrill, soon to be inducted into the IU Athletics Hall of Fame on October the 28th. It's our 35th induction class, and it will bring down through the decades now the number of inductees to 219. But Harold had a special relationship with coaches Pont, Corso, Mallory, Heppner, and Lynch. We'll talk about that and go through the decades with a man that's going to be honored on October the 28th, Harold Morrill. We'll be back with more conversation, more memories. You're listening to Sports Talk. We're live from Yogi's. Welcome back, everyone, along with our producer, Will Bowman, Mike Glasscott on side. Welcome back, everyone, to Yogi's Grill and Bar, sports bar here at the corner of 10th in Indiana, our home away from home on a Tuesday night. Reminiscing, spending some time with soon-to-be-inducted to Hall of Fame Indiana IU Athletics Hall of Fame member, Harold Morrill. Harold, of course, you served under some great coaches, but we'll start with John Pond and that relationship. You mentioned before we went to break, H, that he gave you an opportunity at a young age, and that's where you and I bumped into one another when you were on his varsity staff. It was in 1972, as I remember, and away you went with your coaching career.
Yes, it was a terrific opportunity for me. My wife was a little mad at me, though, because university school, I was making more money than when John offered me to come on the collegiate level, so I took a pay cut to come work on a collegiate level, but, you know, it worked out okay. John was just a special person.
Yeah.
You know, he just was an unbelievable man, had a lot of faith in our team, and we had a lot of fifth-year seniors that enabled us to finish fourth in the country. Can you imagine if we go out and beat Southern Cal and Indiana football's national champs? They finished number one that year.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. So, I remember.
But John was just a special person. I was married at the time. I was one of the five players. We had five players that were married. So he would always ask us to go over and babysit Joy and myself. And we would go over and stay with his family when he'd go to coaches' conventions,
sure,
and things like that, and watch his children. And great kids, and had a really good time with them. They're just a super family.
Well, and your association with John, you know, took you to up in Evanston, too. There were some problems. I mean, we've had a lot of ups and downs.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to be talking about Indiana football 52 years without good, bad, and the ugly. And, you know, there in the late 60s, we had some problems, but that led to John leaving and going to Northwestern, and you followed him to Evanston.
Right. He gave me an opportunity to move up and to coach the whole line up there, which was a nice opportunity for me. I was working with the guards and centers here at Indiana, and so I've always wanted to coach the whole line and try to advance, you know, as you go up. And then in 77, I get a phone call, and it's Coach Dickens on the phone. And maybe he didn't want to make my head coach mad, John Pont, when Dickens, and I says, Coach, what do you call me for? Are you the head coach now? And he said, no, Coach Corso is, but he wants to interview you and wanted to know if you'd even be interested in coming back to Indiana University. Well, at the time, up at Northwestern, we worked on a 10-month contract. In 2 months, I had to paint houses in order to survive. So when Indiana came, and I went over and interviewed with Lee at a hotel in the Marriott up at Park Ridge,
right,
when he came up on a recruiting trip, and he said, yeah, I think that you're the man that I want to coach my offensive line. And it was a 12-month deal, and I always wanted to come back and work at the school that I, you know, graduated from, so I took the job.
Well, and a few years later, if my memory serves me correct, weren't you the offensive coordinator?
Eventually,
in the early 80s?
I was the offensive coordinator for Sam Weiss in 83 season, and then Sam left to go to the Cincinnati Bengals, and Paul Brown had just upped all the assistant contracts, so none of us got to go with Sam. But it was a good opportunity for me to, you know, the John Walsh, you know, offense was fantastic, and I learned a lot of football. And then after that, I was getting ready to, you know, we got let go again. I'm probably the only person that has been fired three times, rehired, you know, and now I'm retired from IU and getting in the Hall of Fame after 37 years.
There you go.
Well, good things happen to good people, and that's why you're going in. And yeah, you stood time, needless to say. But I tell you, and I tell people this, I've been involved with a lot of national championships, both football and basketball, and football bowls. But the 13 years that you and I spent under Bill Mallory will be so very special. After Corso and White left, and Bill took over our first year, as you well know, 0-11. And then six bowls in 9 years. What a man, and what football teams he put on, and you were right at the center of it.
Well, you know, at that time, I was getting ready to take a job at Georgia Tech. Bill probably don't know this, but they interviewed me for the head job when they hired Bill, and I knew I didn't have probably a chance because Ralph at that time brought Sam in, and he had to then probably get, you know, someone with a big name, who'd been a head coach before. The only head coaching I have with eighth grade football, but was able to be retained. And Ralph, it's interesting, when I interviewed, there was like 13 people there, and then after the interview, they hired Bill. And a week later, they called me back and wanted me to interview for the assistant athletic director's job that had opened up. And when I walked in the room, there was the same people there, so I knew I had a pretty good opportunity of being hired on the administrative side. And after 15 years, I thought it'd be a little safer. I wouldn't have to move my family around so much, so I decided to get into administration, and I spent a lot of years in administration and wore a lot of hats.
Well, yeah, and well over two decades. I can't remember the total number of years, but, you know, unfortunately, I'll never, ever, ever, ever forget that day. It's still etched in my mind, October 31st, 1996, in that basketball press room when Bill was fired, and we still had three games left in the season, and I had to do his TV show that night. We had just gotten Mellencamp completely done, and we were doing the TV show on a Thursday night because, Bill, we weren't going to be playing that weekend. We had a bye, and then three games left, and he was going to one of the toughest things I ever had to deal with. We all had to deal with.
Right. When Bill first arrived, Ralph asked me to go over to be his, administrative assistant, and then my office was over in Assembly Hall, I was running back and forth. I was wearing out a pair of shoes about every week, going between Coach Mallory and Ralph, and they were both pretty demanding. So after a year, they hired Coach Smith, like your name, to help Bill, and he came from the pros, I believe, at that time, or a school up north, maybe Northern, and come over, and then after Bill, you know, I cried that day in that press room. And there's a guy that took us to many bowl games in 6 years and 9 years, and it was ridiculous. And he had just recruited Randall L. Can you imagine the way he coaches defense and then have Randall L. on his offensive side? Oh, my good land. We've been back at more bowl games.
Yeah, that was horrid, and a lot of us, kind of got dissolved for a year or two. Well, we won't go there. This is to relive great memories, but that particular October was not a pleasant memory. But that being said, you hung in there, and you came back again in an administrative role, and had an opportunity, albeit a short one due to the unfortunate death of Terry Heppner. But Hep and Bill Lynch, a good friend of yours, and that's how things kind of wound up for you after both Hep and Bill came onto the beat.
I'll tell you a little story of how we hired Coach Heppner. Greenspan came over to my office. He said, "Harold, can you get Terry's number for me?" They had just gone down to play in a bowl game.
Right.
I think it was the Independence Bowl. I'm not positive, but I think it was the Independence Bowl. So I called Coach Pont, and I said, "Coach, I said, can you get me Terry Heppner's number?" He said, "Sure." He said, "I just picked up my car." He brought a brand new Lexus, and he said, "And I'll go over to the athletic department and get it." Well, when he called me back to give me the number, he gave me the number, and then he was upset with me because he had 6 miles on a brand new Lexus driving over there, and one of the students T-boned him in the middle of an intersection. And so by me calling him to go over and get the number, he had an automobile accident. So he was kind of upset with me. But we got the number. We called, Mr. Greenspan called Terry and came in, and when he did come in, you know, he was looking to hire different individuals. And so he called me in one day and he says, hey, Harold, what do you think about being my director of football operations? I said, boy, I'd love to work football. I never worked football. And the whole time I was in administration, I was always had other sports. And so what I wanted to do is work football my last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And so he gave me that opportunity. I said, he says, you know, I'm really embarrassed to even ask you. Were offensive coordinator. I'm asked to be the director of football operations. I says, hey, as long as they don't change my salary, you can call me anything you want, Terry.
Well, and you were an excellent, and it didn't matter what you delved into, being, as we say, and reliving some of your memories as a player and an assistant coach and administrator. You did things, and you bleed. You still bleed cream and crimson.
No
and,
question.
You know, the same thing happened when, Bill Lynch,
right.
he wins his final game at Purdue and the old Oaken Bucket, and the next morning he's fired. And
right.
so, you know, it, like I said, there have been some good and some bad, and the liabilities, I guess, of, you know, the day and age that we rest in right now with major college football.
Right.
But anyway, they got the right man going into the IU Athletics Hall of Fame. And by the way, Harold will be going in with super sub John Laskowski, also Albert Robinson off our track team, Diane Stevenson. You know, I had a great relationship with Di. I can remember when she actually was the first female recipient of a scholarship and was a heck of a softball player and later coached Indiana in softball. Sarah Riling Hildenbrand was a diver under Hobie and Fred Tyler off the swimming team as well. So those five and you enjoy your special night, my friend.
Thank you.
I tell you what, give my best to Joy and the girls, and you've been an outstanding example, Harold, of what it's all about, Indiana University, both, as I say, in the capacities that you held forth, and thanks for being a Hoosier for 52 years, my friend.
My pleasure. It was a great honor for me, and I'm shocked that they even consider me for the Hall of Fame.
Well, there would have been an investigation had you not gone, and let me just put it to you that way. Harold Marl, everybody, joining us into the Athletics Hall of Fame on October the 28th. And when we come back, we'll talk with Amy Burberry, a couple of senior captains, a busy, tough week ahead. Penn State, Rutgers, but you know what? A young team that's getting a little better as the weeks go by. We'll talk Indiana University women's soccer with Amy. When we come back, you're listening to Sports Talk. We're live from Yogi's. Welcome back, everyone. Sports Talk. We continue along about 25 minutes before the top of the hour. And a lot going on this week. Big screen television for the Hoosiers, Ohio State on Saturday afternoon. We have a big soccer game that we're going to have a lot of the Indiana men's soccer fans in as they fellas take on top-ranked Notre Dame here at the top of the hour up in Alumni Field at South Bend. But Amy Burberry joins us. She has every year since she's been the head coach at Indiana U, now numbering 4. I'm not going to call it, first of all, welcome back to the Old Den, one of your favorite restaurants in B-Town. And I'm not going to call it challenging, but, boy, this has been interesting. You brought in a ton of new players, my girl.
We did, to say the least, but a ton of talent. This is our first true full-cycle recruiting class as a staff. Believe it or not, after we've been here for 4 seasons, women's soccer recruiting is very, very early. So these kids have been on our radar for roughly over 2 years. So they've been waiting to come here for a while. They've seen the growth of the program. They've seen the current players get better and better. And just the culture change, the academics, the whole nine yards. So they were ready to come in and play for this team.
No question about it. And, you know, you have each year, you know, taken those challenges not only away from wins and losses, but you're slowly building your program where you're getting your players the kind that will be successful down through the years.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, Indiana speaks for itself with academics, so we don't have to work very hard for that. So just creating a culture of academics first, soccer second, and then, of course, these guys still having some sort of social life and enjoying themselves in college is really, really important. And that's kind of the structure that we've built. I think we've done a really good job getting recruits here in our home state of Indiana, in the Midwest, and then continuing abroad throughout the nation and then the world. You know, we've got a couple Canadians joining Marissa this year. We've got a kid from Australia, of course, Anna Lee from Austria. So it's a fun group with a bunch of different cultures, personalities, and lots of different sarcasm.
All of the new kids coming on, young ladies that have made their mark from in high school and are now playing big time college soccer, I know, and we'll ask this to the women here in a second, Veronica and Marissa, on how their leadership, and not that they're den mothers all of a sudden, but they rely on the older women to steer them through. What is a tough transition? And it is, really. You know that.
Oh, it's a huge transition. I mean, with so many, you know, as older leaders, we have three seniors, Veronica and Marissa being two of the three team captains. You know, you don't want to put too much pressure on these guys to make sure that everything's going right, because you want them to have an amazing senior year playing-wise. But they've done a fantastic job. You know, V had an internship in Chicago this summer, just taking calls on the phone and emailing. Marissa was here all summer, just trying to cultivate the kids when they came in for those first six shocking weeks. Because no matter how much you tell these freshmen how physical it's going to be, how different it's going to be, they just don't get it till they get here. So their leadership has been invaluable.
You know, Amy Burberry joining us in her fourth year, Indiana's women and Penn State, the defending national champions, at 7 o'clock out on the Yeagley pitch on Thursday, and then Rutgers coming in Sunday. I know while we were in break, you had a word with Harold Morrow, and I know Harold was asking you, Tim Jordan was a heck of a football player, and you talked about the scope of recruiting, and lo and behold, I looked down, and there's his daughter, Allison, out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Was that an easy sell, hard sell? And I heard she's doggone playing some pretty good soccer for you.
She is. She's started and played almost about every minute of every game for us so far. The first couple of games we had her as a center back. That's where we recruited her. Great size, very, very good in the air. Pretty mature kid, good soccer player. We moved her up into the holding mid spot in the third or fourth game, and we haven't looked back since. It was fun through the recruiting process because we knew her father went to school here. We didn't do enough research. We didn't realize what a good football player he was, the bowls that he went to and the teams that he played for in the NFL, till she was taking a picture of the helmets over by the weight room. And my assistant asked, is your dad a big Cardinals fan? She's like, no, that's my dad's name.
Yes.
So it was hysterical.
Yes, he was a heck of a player, no question about it. And we're glad that she's in the Hoosier fold there. We want to talk to a couple of women that have been integral parts to the Indiana University women's soccer team since AB arrived on beat, Veronica Ellis and also Marissa Borchke. And Veronica, we'll start with you. You're one of the captains, along with Marissa, and Kayla Smith is the third captain. You have endured, young lady. By that I mean you have escaped injury. You have started practically every game in your entire career. Talk to me a little about where this team is chemistry-wise as now you really get into the nuts and bolts of the conference season.
Yeah, I'm really proud of this team so far.
Put that up a little closer, huh?
Sorry.
That's okay.
I think we've done a really good job. I think one of the best things about it is the fact that we all really believe in ourselves and believe in the fact that we can succeed, and that's something that's really important.
Well, it is indeed, and you're having fun with these youngins. What are you teaching them?
Yeah, it's been really fun having them. They have a different chemistry and a different dynamic than the rest of us, kind of new freshness, and they're definitely some characters. They make us laugh every now and then. It's been good.
Has the personality, let's put it to you that way, they all have talent, or Amy wouldn't have recruited them here to play the game of soccer. That said, from the time you arrived as a freshman, has the environment of those 4 years changed? And I'm just talking about personality of the young ladies coming in freshman this year as opposed to maybe when you were a freshman 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think the culture has changed over time. I mean, Amy's first year was my first year as well, and she's really shaped the culture in a positive way, having us focus on school, making sure that we're good people outside of soccer, and really showing Indiana University and representing it. So I think that's been a really good change over the years.
Marissa, talk to me a little about Marissa joining us, Borchke, and a young lady. that has played a lot of soccer for Amy. And, hey, thanks for coming back. I remember now the old man tends to forget from one year to the next. I had you both on last year. But talk to me about the year that's unfolding. What are you seeing? What's been positive in the camp?
I think we've been doing extremely well. We're 2-3 right now in the Big Ten. I think going forward, we have guaranteed 6 games left. So I think we're going to focus on each game coming up. And I think that we have a team with a lot of potential. So I think that it'd be fun. Veronica and I were on the 2013 team that was able to make it to the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament and make it to the round of 32. And I would love for our teammates, for the juniors, all the way to the freshmen, to be able to experience that same postseason play.
You know, when we talk to you, we know that your cup of tea is defense. How's this team played on that side of the field this year? And maybe where do you need to improve, or where is it heading defensively as, say, opposed to last year?
I think defensively we've been very solid. One of our main points is always to defend with 11 and attack with 11, and I think that hasn't changed this year. I think we stick to our game plan when coming to defend, and we're very compact, and that's what I always hear Serge on the line, keep the lines tight, and I think that's one of our main focuses, and I think we've been very solid with our defense.
You know, I was talking to Veronica about the atmosphere change, or at least the 4 years from the time you arrived until these women, young women, came in and started their collegiate career. Do you see much of a change in I'm not going to say attitude, but just the way they approach the game?
I think overall, just with the 11 freshmen coming in, it's a lot about their confidence. And I think it was awesome that they were able to come in the summer and take some classes, because we were able to play almost every day outside and be able to start the team chemistry in the summer, so that when preseason came, we were able to focus more on the team tactics and what we needed to do to have a good season.
Well, both of you are excellent role models and since you've been here and playing soccer. The leadership role, I mean, you got a lot on your plate. I mean, you got school, you've got soccer, you got to, you know, enhance your both of your games. But talk to me a little about the leadership role and kind of being the, you know, the, hey, if you, I'm here, if you need me. How's that reception been?
I think for Veronica and I, one of the biggest things is to be a good example on and off the field. For me personally, I'm a center back, so I'm able to see the whole entire field. So I'm able to help on the field with organization. But even off the field, like, I feel like anyone is able to come up and approach me if they have any problems that they need help with. I would 100% be able to help them with anything they need.
You know, we talked to you last year, and you're a redshirt senior. I mean, you came to us, you're out of north of the border up in Ontario, but you transferred here from the New Jersey Institute of Technology. And obviously, from what you've done since you arrived, everything has been great for you.
It has been.
What's that red shirt? What that red shirt you kind of do? Did that just mature you, build you more strongly toward not only academics, but your game?
It's always unfortunate to get a season-ending injury, but I also think that it was very beneficial for me. I was able to be on the sideline and watch the game, and I think that's really important to expand my knowledge of the game, and that's why sometimes, even though it's unfortunate I wasn't able to get out there, I think it has really taught me a lot about the tactical side of the soccer.
Yeah, and Coach Burberry, is very intense, you know, getting things done. I mean, that's the way she is. She was like that as a player, and, she has been like that in her 3-plus years now. But, Veronica, talk to me a little about this weekend. They win a national championship, added Rutgers and added Maryland a couple of years ago to the Big Ten in the sport. It's like volleyball with the volleyball team, night in, night out. Talk to me a little about Penn State. What do you see on paper? And talk to me a little about that match coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, we're really excited about the game on Thursday. I mean, some people obviously think on paper that Penn State is the one. But the thing that I said is the fact that we believe in this team and believe that we can do anything. And I think that's something that's really important. And personally, as a player, I think Marissa probably feels the same way, and I'm sure Amy felt this way when she was a player, but having the opportunity to play a really good team is something really exciting. It's not something to be afraid of. It's a great chance to rise up to the level and really prove what this team and Indiana University can do.
Yeah, and you know, Marissa, chime in on that. You've taken on Penn State, or you've looked at Penn State. You have Rutgers, but Penn State. What do you see on Thursday night, how the match will unfold? How do you kind of envision it?
I think what will be like key for us is to put together a full 90 minutes. When you play great teams like a Penn State and even a Rutgers on Sunday, they capitalize on, you know, a lot of the mistakes you make. So if we can limit those mistakes, I feel like then we would have a great opportunity to be able to compete against them.
That's great. Well, Coach, you know, two outstanding examples. We said it last year. And you can see the maturity growing in these women and their games. And it's got to be exciting for you to know that you've had a hand in bringing these women here and how they've kind of blossomed.
It really is. I mean, these guys as players have matured so much over the 4 years. I'm not sure what we'd do without them on the field. We were actually talking about that this morning. We're already looking ahead. We're like, all right, we're not going to have a Marissa. We're not going to have a V. What would we do? But they've just been great. And then them growing as people is unbelievable. I mean, you're looking at two future Kelley School graduates. One's going on to law school, most likely. The other one's on interviews every 5 minutes. So, you know, I think they've embraced the entire culture of the program that we want, and the whole culture of Indiana University as being a student athlete. They've taken advantage of every avenue that we've offered, and you're looking at two kids that have thrived from it.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head. It's my next question. I'm from our radio booth Saturday night against the Spartans. I looked down and on the big screen, and there you were with the entire team, and you were introduced winning the Herbert Cup. And, again, you don't win the with all the competition and the smarts off the field by all of our sports teams. That is pretty tough to be to win, and you've dominated that. You got to be awfully proud of that.
Oh, so proud! I mean, three of the last four semesters, it was unheard of for a big team to win that for the first time when we did it back in 2014. We were even asking for a separate category of the Herbert Cup for teams that were larger than 20 or more.
Sure.
But we ended up doing it, and now it's a standard for our team, and we push each other in the classroom as well as on the field.
And the Herbert Cup, for those of you that don't know listening in, given to the IU team with the highest semester GPA, and it is off the chart. You and your staff to be commended there. And, well, kind of capsulized things so far. I mean, you've beaten three teams that last year were in the NCAA tournament. You got your work cut out for you this week. But like the women said, you know, we kind of relish these, embrace these, the opportunity to play the best.
Yeah, I think V said it best. I mean, if you're gonna be the best, you've got to play the best. We're in one of the best conferences in the country in women's soccer. There's 332 teams in Division I women's soccer. We're playing two that were in the Final Four and the national champion in one weekend. Who else gets to do that over the course of the season? So we're just kind of embracing that underdog. I mean, I don't think anyone expects us to win. We believe we can. So we kind of talked about the football team a little bit on Saturday, and we just said, were you there? Did you see it? Who thought that they could win? Did the team believe? And it was just pretty cool. You know, we said, why can't we be the ones to shock the nation on Thursday night? So we're looking forward to it. I think we're up for it. I think we've got a good game plan. Penn State is very good, but I think there's areas where we can expose them. And if we can execute and capitalize on the chances that we get, I think we can be some very happy people around 9 o'clock on Thursday.
And, you know, the doggone bounce of the ball, it could have gone a lot. It could have gone differently. You were out in Lincoln, played Nebraska awfully tough. That was a tough pill to swallow. But the game before that, I mean, you're getting some good things done. How's the finishing been? Is it on the climb? That against Wisconsin we're talking about. And that was a gutsy 3-2 win out on the pitch.
Yeah, we've got two wins in the conference right now, a big-time win away at Illinois in overtime. where statistically we were not the better team and we found a way to win.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, again, we come back twice, win 3-2. We've scored more goals this year than all of last year already, with six games guaranteed remaining. We've got eight different goal scorers. And what we're looking for, I think, that we have to continue to build on is that special player. As we look out, you know, we've got a bunch of kids that are stepping up at different times. For us to continue to compete and get into that 8-team tournament at the end of the year, we've got to have a couple that are consistently over and over getting it done for us in the final third.
You know, Amy, you were talking about bringing in some of the Canadian influence, and Marissa being one of them, but also a young lady that's only a freshman, Megan Scott. Now, talk about her impact, because, I mean, you didn't bring them in to redshirt. I mean, if they can play, they can play, and you've utilized that so far this fall.
Sure. I mean, that's always been our policy. If you're the best, you're going to play. I mean, we're looking for the best 11 every week, every game. Megan has never played outside back in her entire life. She was a homegrown Canadian center back, never moved out of that spot. And we just found in preseason her service from the flanks, from corner kicks, was unbelievable. And we couldn't believe that she was always locked into the middle of the field. So we threw her out there. She didn't look back. She embraced it. And again, another kid who won a spot and has played, I think, every minute of every game up until this point, and I think leads our team in assists.
Michaela Brown leads you in scoring, and here again is a young player, sophomore, but she's a redshirt sophomore. Talk a little about her play.
Sure, yeah. Michaela's coming off an ACL. We had those three last year in 5 weeks.
You had a bad stretch.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, yeah.
Michaela, Abby Allen, and Zuckerman. Abby and Michaela are back. Michaela, I think, is finally hitting her stride. Scored a couple of goals in the same game against James Madison, scored the big goal against Illinois in overtime. She's just continuing to get better week by week. You can see in training she's becoming a bit more confident. We just got to get her a little bit more consistent inside 12 yards.
Well, there was a young lady that played and was a very good goal scorer, Lisa Nuansingsing, a few years ago, and I had a culture shock. I finally was able to pronounce her name by the time she graduated. And then I pick up your roster over the summer, and I see what was going to be a rather huge stumbling block for the old man, because she was a freshman from Hudson, Ohio, Sarah, and she had a long name, and I had no idea how to pronounce it, but it's now Sarah Lamadou.
It is, and don't feel bad, because for 2 years, we called her Sarah Lahamadou. And she never told us we were saying it wrong until she got on campus this fall. So what is wrong with you? So we've got it right now, too. It's Sarah Lamadou.
And Sarah, you're talking about the Nebraska game. That was tied up. Was scoreless first half. She had a lot of saves, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
She's done well so far.
Yeah, she's done a good job for us. Some of the goals that we've given up this year, I'm not sure we could have done anything about. She's come up big for us in some of the big games. We're looking for her to bail us out. You know, we always ask of our goalkeepers to have one big save a half, and I think she's been able to do that for us, especially in that Wisconsin game.
Well, the end result is getting into the Big Ten tournament and the feather in the cap, Penn State, Rutgers, a couple of toughies, but all kinds. I mean, we're only in early October. Everything out in front of you, too, and we wish you the best of luck the rest of the year, and we'll have you back. We'll have you back in, but good luck against Penn State. Ought to be a great crowd. Going to catch a beautiful night weather-wise. So,
thanks so much, Joe.
Girls, before just talk to me, Marissa. What has playing soccer at Indiana Unit? What's it afforded you? What's it meant to you?
I mean, I think it means everything. Like, I'm graduating in 2 months from now. I'm like, what am I going to do without having this student-athlete title with me? It means so much to be able to pull a jersey over your head on a Thursday night or a Sunday and be able to represent your university as a soccer player.
Well, stay healthy the rest of the year and the best of luck. How about you, Veronica?
Yeah, I agree with Marissa. It's so fun being a part of your school and really representing it. But I think something that's been really special for me is the relationships that I've made with my teammates. Marissa's one of my best friends on the team, and I just know that I will take those friendships with me forever.
Yeah, it's something that you'll always not only embrace now, but cherish forever. Women, thank you for coming on again. And, you know, we wish you best luck on Thursday night. Go get those Nittany Lions, okay? And we'll be back to close out things. You're listening to Sports Talk. We're live from Yogi's. That'll about do it for tonight. Our Yogi's Employee of the Week is Kaylee O'Connor, doing a great job here for the staff and management of Yogi's Grill and Sports Bar. Lots going on, of course. Get out there and support Amy Burberry and the women at 7 o'clock on the Yeagley pitch against the defending national champion Penn State Nittany Lions. And tomorrow night, Terry joins Glass in the Zone, and your phone calls at 6. And, of course, the Hoosiers, come on in. The men are on big screen here against Notre Dame in a second. Indiana, Ohio State, Saturday at 3:30. For our producer, Will Boatman, Joanna, Mike Lascott, Joe Smith, you've been listening to Sports Talk on News Talk 96.1, AM 1370, WGCL. Have a great week, and go Hoosiers.